So what we've been saying is that this entire period is bringing a lot of new customers to the online shopping world. And so one of the questions is, well, how sticky is that once the economy starts to open up and those stores that were closed are now open again? Our view is that it's not going to be 100% stickiness, but we think it's probably somewhere between 30 to 40%.
Welcome to the 10K Collective, my friends. Now, look, if you're listening for hacks and short-term tactics, I'm afraid you are in the wrong place. Let me tell you about the 10K Collective Mastermind. First of all, its members meet in person. They know each other well. They all make over $500,000 a year. Several make several million a year. Many have doubled their revenue over the last 18 months. If you're that kind of person, then this podcast is made for you. Today's episode is sponsored by Future State Media, off Amazon traffic experts for Amazon sellers. Future State Media will build you a custom-made website. Built to grab traffic from search engines and social media, your site is your secret weapon for Amazon product launches, to stabilize your Amazon sales, or to build an email list on autopilot. Go to www.futurestatemedia.com for your free guide to Google SEO for Amazon sellers. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the 10K Collective podcast, one of the sub-podcasts of the Amazing FBA family, and that's specifically geared to six, seven, and eight-figure sellers. So we're talking high-level stuff today. We're talking with Chris Shipfling and Jason Somerville from Global Wired Advisors, coming to us live from the States. Well, it won't be live by the time you listen to it. And they are experienced M&A, in other words, mergers and acquisition advisors for digitally native enterprises. That's even hard to say, folks. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Michael. Happy to be here.
Thanks,
Jason.
Yeah, same. Thank you so much.
We got Jason Somerville. I believe you're in North Carolina. Is that right?
That's right. Charlotte, North Carolina.
And Chris.
The second largest financial services city in the United States.
I had no idea. Interesting. And Chris, where are you coming to us from today?
I am about three offices down from Jason.
Oh, amazing.
We are practicing, we're practicing very good social distancing. So we're not in the same conference room. We are in separate offices.
Hilarious. So you guys are in separate offices in the same building. I think that's unique for me in the podcast. So as is implied by the fact that I can't even speak your tagline, M&A advisors, digitally native, you guys speak a slightly different language from most so-called business brokers. So that's something we're going to come on to in our next episode. We're going to talk about the difference between business brokers as they tend to appear in the Amazon FBA space versus an M&A advisor and how you sell to private equity and all that good stuff. But first of all, I think in this episode, we're going to talk about COVID-19. We have to deal with it. It's on everyone's minds. And rightly so. And in this episode, I think we're going to address what does it look like right now for e-commerce and how does it look the other side of that? Because I think it's not all doom and gloom as far as I can tell from our chats before this show. So first of all, I'd like to sort of hand the floor over to Jason a bit to talk about the big macroeconomic picture, because obviously that's affecting things a great deal at the moment. So Jason, any starting points you want to make about the macroeconomic picture right now for e-commerce?
Sure. Thanks, Michael. Yeah, you know, I think what we'd like to do is give your viewers kind of our viewpoint, what we're experiencing in the market kind of day in and day out in selling businesses of this type and how it's affected our world, you know, which is just a sub piece of the broader world. You know, I won't go too much into the, you know, worldwide picture, but I'll give a little bit to set the stage because probably most of your listeners actually kind of are following what's going on. I mean, as probably most know, the COVID-19, you know, pandemic at this point started a number of weeks ago. It started in China, where the discussion became more of a supply chain type of a discussion. And that was the first place that e-commerce started to actually be affected by this virus. You know, a lot of e-commerce sellers, a lot of e-commerce businesses had stocked up on inventory heading into the Chinese New Year. And that in a lot of ways actually helped to mitigate the effects of the supply chain disruption as China went through all of this first, and a lot of their factories became shut down, and those supply chains into the U.S. for a lot of consumer products had been shut off. And so as it then kind of spread into Europe and then the United States, we kind of went from a supply chain type of an issue to a much bigger, broader overall issue, certainly here in the U.S. And obviously in Europe and all over the world. And so, you know, over the last 6 weeks or so, as the effects have been very, very acute in, you know, our economy as well as in Europe and elsewhere, there have been a lot of major developments, and a lot of those have affected all businesses, including e-commerce businesses. But, you know, e-commerce tends to, you know, has tended to, you know, be affected sort of uniquely from a lot of others. And so as, you know, here in the U.S. and in Europe, as one country, one municipality after another was effectively put into a quarantine or, you know, a stay-at-home order. You know, there's a few different names for it. That's when the bigger picture effects started, you know, really started from a, again, we'll say from an economic standpoint, as well as obviously from a personal and healthcare standpoint. And so what we started to see in, you know, our, call it public capital markets, is, you know, in mid-March is when you started to see the effects start to, you know, really come through. And we had, you know, our equity market, our stock market was dramatically affected. It fell rather precipitously. Business activity had, you know, really kind of ground to a halt, other than essential businesses as far as traditional, you know, companies are concerned. And then, you know, one theme that we'll get into is we're starting to rotate from a virus discussion into more of a, you know, post-virus economic discussion. But before we get into that, you know, kind of bringing this home to e-commerce, you know, when people are forced to stay in their homes, and a lot of their other activities are no longer available to them, what we have seen is many of them buy goods online. And that is one of the profound differences that we've seen in the e-commerce space versus a lot of other, you know, areas where, you know, many, many, many other businesses, travel businesses, hotel businesses, cruise lines, airlines, even restaurants and local stores have all been effectively shut off from economic activity now for going on well over a month. The e-commerce world has actually flourished during this time. And so, you know, it's always a unique topic to discuss. I mean, because you don't necessarily want to jump up and down and throw a party while everyone is suffering around you. But the facts kind of remain the facts. The facts are that a lot of businesses who are online and who sell consumer goods, and not just essential consumer goods, a lot of non-essential companies are doing really well also. But what's happening is the online shopping is increasing very dramatically. I mean, we have a number of clients that in the month of March and into early April saw sales levels that were, you know, 4, 5, 6 times what they saw all of fourth quarter 2019. I mean, the charts on some of these are dramatic in the kind of upward and to the right direction. So with e-commerce, it's become more of an inventory management exercise to fulfill the demand and obviously deal with some of the Amazon issues that have occurred where, you know, they started to limit the number of shipments for goods into their warehouses and then also started to deprioritize non-essential goods to customers as they were buying. But it became a scenario where, you know, a lot of e-commerce businesses didn't have, and, you know, enough inventory to fulfill the demand in the last 3-4 weeks. And that's been their problem much more so than not having any customers or not having any revenue, which is the case for a lot of other businesses.
Yeah, that's a fair summary of the situation right now. So I guess what interests me is to move then from that, because I know we're sort of jumping ahead. I know that Chris and I may discuss some of the more finer points of this, but from the macroeconomics perspective, and I know that your time on Wall Street has given you a great sense for this, which is why it's great to have you on. Where do you think we can extrapolate from where we were going before COVID-19? And as you would say, as people are rotating their shift, thinking to what's happening after this, people are talking, for example, with that V-shaped recession where it sort of bounces down, bounces back up. And then there's I've heard of the bathtub recession, which is when it goes really deep for a really long time, which some Wall Street guys have talked about. But specifically with e-commerce, where do you see the big picture leading at, say, I don't know, in August, September, whenever the sort of lockdowns or stay at home, whatever it is, starts to, you know, wind down?
Sure. Well, I'll start by saying that the graph, obviously, for e-commerce, for most e-commerce businesses, and I would say 100% of our clients, it doesn't look like a V so far, right? So you don't have the left side of the V. So that's kind of number one. What you actually have is, if you kind of chart it out up through January, February, all of a sudden you see, you know, the chart looking more like a hockey stick, you know, up and to the right. So I'll start with that. With respect to how the bigger picture economy, which, you know, is more of that, you know, the left side of the V is what we're doing now. Right now, we're in the middle of the left side of the V. And, you know, what does the rest of the journey look like? Our view is that, you know, from a macro perspective, it isn't really so much a V as what we would call almost like a backwards check mark, if that makes sense. So we feel like what happens in the short run is the left side of the V is taller than the right side. And you go, you know, into, I think we think we have a fairly dramatic bounce, but that bounce might be, say, 50%. Of the depth of the left side of the V. And then you enter into what we're going to call, you know, more of that recovery period. And a lot of that, and what the shape of that is going to be driven by, A, how long this sort of shutdown lasts, because we've determined every week matters with this. It's not a scenario where, you know, a week is the same as 3 weeks, is the same as 6 weeks. But the longer it goes, the deeper the V will get. And I think the longer before you can even think of getting back to where we were before. But we think the initial rebound is pretty good. It's pretty sharp. But what we don't think is it's going to be, you know, a 1 month full bounce back to where you were before in the bigger economy, because there's a lot of destruction and damage being done right now to businesses and the consumer that's going to have to be dealt with over the next 6 to 12 months. And so, you know, a lot of that will be influenced too by things like stimulus programs and how big those get and how efficient and helpful those actually are. Because what we've seen so far is, while the U.S. government and the Federal Reserve has tried valiantly to reduce the effects, much like most things with government in particular, they're inefficient, they're sort of what we would say ham-handed, they're not working exactly like they thought they would work. And so those are not unpredictable things. And so it's not just a matter of a government saying, well, we're going to put X number of trillion, you know, dollars, pounds, euros into the economy. It's how those actually get delivered and how efficient those programs are, which would determine, you know, how well that funding helps the rebound and how quickly the recovery can occur. If that makes sense.
It does. So when it comes to, first of all, thank you. It's interesting to put things in the bigger picture perspective. I'm a fan of macroeconomics. My favorite newspaper is The Economist, which is you know, got quite a big America section, even though it's I think ultimately a British publication. But nevertheless, we've got to bring it home to e-commerce. So within all of that, I mean, you've already intimated that e-commerce, because people are sitting at home, the demand side is working really, really hard for a lot of products, although it seems very, very divided. I mean, it's interesting that your clients are seeing like a 400% growth or whatever in sales within the masterminds I've got, which is a microcosm of Amazon sellers that are doing, say, between, $500,000 to $5 million dollars a month, a year, I should say. Some of those have experienced like an 80% drop in sales, and a couple of them have experienced massive increase, like 300%. So it seems like it's kind of quite sector specific. How do you think that's going to play out? Well, first of all, is that something you've seen across the board, or are my guys just freaks? And secondly, how do you think that's going to play out as we get back into the normal economy?
Well, no, I don't think your guys are freaks. I think that, you know, we
sorry guys.
We have a very good client base, and they happen to be in categories I think that are certainly benefited by what's going on overall. I think that what happens is in the longer run. So in the shorter run, I think there's a couple of themes. And those themes are number one, you have a short-term shift to online shopping. And so the call it the allocation or the market share of online versus traditional is shifting heavily online in the short run, as people are just actually, there's no stores to go to in order to purchase things. So in the short run, that's a macro behavior set that will benefit a lot of e-commerce businesses. Now, as we rotate into recovery, though, there's a couple of key questions. One would be, we call it stickiness. So what we've been saying is that this entire period is bringing a lot of new customers to the online shopping world, and it's bringing customers that maybe already were online shoppers to a heavy degree into categories that they normally would still purchase in a traditional retail type of an outlet. And so one of the questions is, well, how sticky is that once the economy starts to open up and those stores that were closed are now open again? Our view is that it's not going to be 100% stickiness, but we think it's probably somewhere between 30 to 40% of that demand, it, you know, stays around for the long term. So that's number one, you know, in terms of what's going to drive, you know, sales for e-commerce businesses in the next, you know, 6, 12, 18, 24 months and beyond. Now, the other one is, if the consumer overall is materially harmed on an overall basis, what we tend to see as you go into a recession are natural behaviors such as discretionary items are the ones that are affected first. So if it's a luxury good or a non-necessity or something that's, you know, very high end in terms of where they play in their market, those are typically the kinds of categories that see the earliest and sharpest reduction in revenue. And so I think you start to rotate into a consumer behavior model that is correlated to the overall breadth and depth of the economic downturn. And so that's why certain categories, just like would occur in any normal kind of natural recession, certain categories will be more affected than others because of that. And throughout time, that's always been the case.
Yeah, thank you for that. And that, by the way, that puts into context what I was saying about my poor mastermind members, a couple of whom are indeed selling goods that, now I think about it, are luxury goods. One of them is like a luxury travel good. So, of course, that would explain why it went down 80%, right? Okay, so there's a whole bunch of things to say, because I mean, in the end, you guys are business brokers slash merger and acquisition advisors, and we'll explore the difference of that in the next one. But when it comes to an e-commerce business perspective, if you're looking at your business as an asset that is saleable, what are the things you would suggest that people do right now to keep their assets saleable and attractive in the future, despite the fact that you may or may not be experiencing some kind of downturn right now? How would you sort of approach that? If I came to you and said, I'm in the travel sector and I sell luxury goods, how do I sort of shore up the value of my business as an asset that could be saleable to you guys in the future?
Sure. Well, I would put it in sort of two different buckets, right? I would say that one bucket would be, you know, look, you're part of the group that even though you're e-commerce based, you've experienced difficulties and your sales are, you know, dropping off materially. So that's sort of bucket one. Bucket two would be businesses that have actually, you know, they've thrived, they've grown in throughout this, and will likely continue to grow even as we enter into more of the recovery phase. So if you're bucket one, our suggestion would be number one, take advantage of and try to access as much liquidity as you possibly can. So that would be number one. And in the United States, there's a number of programs as part of our stimulus that allow smaller companies to access liquidity for their businesses. And what you want to do is you want to access that liquidity because the investment in the future that you make now is likely going to pay huge dividends. The reason, some of the reasons being, we'll get into in a moment with bucket two, but you know, kind of our view there is that as this event is likely to affect consumer behavior for the, you know, for the long term, the attractiveness of companies that are in this vertical becomes that much higher. And so, you know, the value of your asset, all else being equal, is going to be higher after this because e-commerce businesses, in our view, just got a lot more attractive than they were even in January to a lot of people that maybe historically felt like they didn't necessarily want to have exposure to this industry. So I would say that access liquidity, if you're going through a downturn currently now, a reduction in revenue, and try to get really smart about inventory management here. Try to be prepared. If you're in a category that you feel that as soon as kind of the crisis period is over, we'll likely see a bounce, then be ready for it. You know, don't be in a position where after going through, you know, 6, 8, 12 weeks of difficulty, that all of a sudden the consumer demand comes back and you're caught shorthanded and you can't take advantage of it. Because in a lot of categories, let's use the one you mentioned, travel. You know, even though we think that people are going to be cautious when travel opens up again, there's a lot of pent-up travel demand that's building right now. And so a lot of people, when things open up, I think they're going to want to take a trip that they would have otherwise taken. And when they do, here's kind of where it meets the e-commerce road. They're more likely to now buy their stuff that they need online than they would have been in January, if that makes sense.
So, absolutely, yeah.
Yep. And then I can get into bucket two, Michael, but I'll pause if you want to ask any follow-ups.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to say, first of all, you're quite right. And it's a funny thing that I try and think bigger picture, but even so, I was thinking, you know, this poor guy with his travel accessories. And then you're so right. My wife's been eyeing up, you know, the adverts that be retargeting on Facebook, where she's here 24/7 like everyone else. Facebook's got a lot of eyeballs right now, for example. Sure. And trying to restrain herself from buying. So like, we could go to New York for, you know, $150. I'm like, that's because when we got there, we wouldn't be able to go into a restaurant and we'd probably be quarantined in a hotel or whatever. So, but yeah, you're right. There is going to be pent-up demand. I just wanted to bring in Chris, because Chris, I know you work very much on the sales of business type side, and just get your perspective just so quickly on your experience of, you know, trying to sell these businesses or you know, to be a mergers and acquisitions advisor, if you prefer. And how big the jump in value of e-commerce businesses might possibly be, which I know is very speculative, but let's have a go at that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jason already alluded to this, and I'll echo a little bit. You know, on the other side of this, there's going to be, I think, and we're already starting to see it, when it comes to, you know, more sophisticated capital, they are looking now at e-commerce as something that they need to lever themselves with. They need to invest in, and so, you know, I think what's, as Jason said, a lot of people are spending a lot of time at home, and we are effectively through quarantine training them how to become good consumers of e-commerce. And so that's not going to change. And just like you gave with the example about how we've been sitting here, you know, that is a great contrast of someone, you know, pre-COVID looking to take a trip, how they might, you know, what are their behaviors, right? What are the consumer purchasing behaviors pre-COVID versus what does that same trip now look like post-COVID? It looks different. Everything looks different. You know, they're more likely to be very comfortable doing research and discovery work on an Amazon search platform, search bar, versus say going to Google versus just going to the mall and taking a look at what they could potentially purchase. So, you know, I think the world is going to look a lot different. And I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Exactly. Just to get a flavor of where you think it's going. Okay. So, Jason, you were going to talk about those more fortunate businesses that are continuing to grow, how they should, I guess, you know, take advantage of this so that they don't have a 400% spike in sales and then it drops back to something and they kind of think, damn, I wish I could have captured that somehow. So what's the advice to those guys?
Sure. You know, especially if you're looking at the value of your asset, the value of your company, you know, what we're expecting is going to occur. And last week is a good example. So I had probably five phone calls last week with family offices. So they manage anywhere from 100 to 500 million of assets who have never invested in e-com before. Now wanting to look heavily at the space and start to build a portfolio that has e-commerce exposure. And I think we're in the very, 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 you know, kind of early stages of that. And our expectation is that the allocation models for a lot of professional capital is going to start to skew heavily towards sectors like e-commerce. So if you are an owner of an e-commerce asset and you've experienced a spike in sales and overall your prospects are now looking even better than they were before longer term, then our suggestion is to seriously consider looking at the market earlier rather than later. Because what you want is, yeah, as this capital is all sort of allocating and reallocating to e-commerce, you want to be able to take advantage of that and effectively get in while the getting's good. Let's just put it that way. And so what we tend to see in markets in general, just across all financial and capital markets, is that moves are almost always pendulums that swing too far in one direction or another. And so if the future looks the way we are predicting it to look, then what you're going to see is a bunch of capital rush into a space that's going to, you know, really drive valuations higher. And at some point, they'll probably get too high. And then that's when the pendulum will start to, you know, lose momentum and start to swing the other way. We've seen it in other markets. A good example would be, last year, we saw it in public cannabis stocks. We saw valuations go through the roof and then crash, you know, 70%. We saw it in the dot-com, you know, bubble back in early 2000s as well. And so what we think is going to happen, because there's a lot of dry powder on corporate balance sheets and in private equity funds, that powder is going to still want to chase deals. But now more of those deals are going to be e-commerce than ever before. So it's really about prepping your company, getting your head in the mind frame of potentially selling the business. There's a lot that goes into that in terms of the process. Won't get into a ton of detail here because it's not the topic we're on, but it's really taking a focus where if you thought that one day you might sell your successful e-commerce company, you might want to change that to, well, maybe that one day needs to be sooner rather than later.
And thank you. That's an excellent summary. I really, it's fantastic to have that view of the markets, because you say that allocation that goes too far one way and the other. We see it. We've even seen it on the stock market, right? Those of us who are less plugged into Wall Street and so forth, you can see that the every day, you know, Trump or Boris Johnson or somebody, you know, says something and the market goes swinging downwards and then it swings back up the next day in a kind of crazy way. And I guess that's a very exaggerated short-term version of what you've been talking about. Like everyone was over-optimistic about dot-com bubble and then they all went very pessimistic. And I remember Tom Peters saying, here's the thing about the dot-com bubble. I don't think anyone took the internet anything like seriously enough, which in 2001 sounded ridiculous. And how absolutely right was he? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I take that point. And Chris, you're in the sharp end of trying to sell these businesses. Is there anything else you want to add to those who are sitting on a very good business that's thriving at the moment?
No, I mean, honestly, Jason covered it, and I think he articulated it wonderfully. You know, the way that I'm speaking with kind of on the front line when someone has an interest in selling their business, we walk through these points with them specifically during this current time. You know, and our firm is always chasing what's happening from a macro and a microeconomic perspective, because it's very, very relevant to every single potential client that we're speaking with. So no, I don't really have a whole lot to add. I think Jason did a great job summarizing that. So
great. Well, look, we better let you get back to life in Charlotte, which I did not know was the second biggest financial sort of center after New York. That's amazing. And given the state New York is in, you guys are probably carrying the can right now. So if people want to get in contact with you or at least start the process of thinking about how to create a sellable asset out of their business, how do they get in contact with you? And do you have any sort of resources for them or any other help you could offer?
Yeah, I think the best way is, you know, they can go to our website and fill out a consultation form. You know, our website is pretty simple. It's globalwiredadvisors.com. Or just put that into Google. We'll be the number one link that shows up. You know, we offer consultations complimentary. It's not just a quick valuation or value your website. It's going to be a very in-depth perspective and view on where is your company in relation to the current market or capital market. You know, we talk about this a lot in the office, and I'm stealing this from my partner here, Jason, but we talk about this topic of intersection. And when it comes to selling your business, there really is an intersection of, you know, what is the company's vision, right? What is the seller's goal? And then where do both of those things stand in the capital markets currently? And so there's a lot that goes behind that. There's a lot of detail that goes into that. And so we're happy to do a full consultation with, you know, any of your listeners who, you know, believe now is a good time to start looking at potentially going to market. And we're also happy to talk to anybody who may be fairly early, you know, about 18 to 24 months away. And really happy to, you know, guide them through what needs to potentially be done to get to that intersection where they are ready to go to market.
Well, it's good to hear that you're willing to have a chat to people in some depth for free. That's always great. And I can't stress enough, having spoken to quite a few business brokers of various descriptions on this podcast, how clear it is to me now that it's so important to create a sellable asset pretty much from day one, because there's no downside to it. It just makes it a better business, even if you're going to never sell it and pass it on to grandchildren. And I do know a couple of businesses that are multi-generational and may indeed pass it on to the grandchildren, but it's more likely to be there for them if it's built to sell. So I would urge you, if you do have a serious business going, that you get in touch with these guys and get a view. Jason, any last things to add on that?
You know, I just want everyone to, kind of understand that this is all going to pass, you know, fairly shortly. I think that's the good news. I think that it's easy, both professionally and personally, to get trapped into short-term thinking when something like this happens. And I would urge anybody, you know, with a business, whether it's an e-commerce business or a corner store or anything, to stay strategic and stay long-term with the thinking, and try and use this as an opportunity, because I think for a lot of your listeners, this actually is a very unique opportunity. And what we find is a lot of fortunes are made when there are massive disruptions in economies, and not to lose sight of that. And, you know, not to be pessimistic, because there's a lot of reasons to be very optimistic.
Yeah, I really like that. And also what I like is the fact that you've highlighted just how, you know, sticky, if you like, the rise in e-commerce demand is going to be, which means that, you know, there's poor guys who I know in my mastermind suffering right now selling travel stuff, for example, via e-commerce. Once people are allowed out and they're jumping on planes like their lives depend on it, because they're desperate to get away from their families and their hometown and see something that isn't the inside of their flat or their house, then that business could boom if he prepares for that. So I really like that optimism based on some solid reading of the market. That's what we want here. So guys, a very, very helpful and interesting episode. Thank you so much for your time. So Chris Shipfling and Jason Somerville of Global Wired Advisors, guys. So go, if you want to check that out, globalwiredadvisors.com, you can get a free consultation. I personally would really suggest you do that. Free is a great price. There's nothing to lose, and you might learn some really great stuff about your business. So there's my plug for you. Thank you very much, guys, for coming on.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Michael. Take care.
Thanks very much for listening to the 10K Collective podcast, part of the family of podcasts under the amazing FBA umbrella. If you want to check out more about the Mastermind, if you are an Amazon seller based in the UK or Europe, then go to www.amazingfba.com and look under paid programs where you'll get the latest details. Today's episode is sponsored by Future State Media, off Amazon traffic experts for Amazon sellers. Future State Media will build you a custom-made website. Built to grab traffic from search engines and social media, your site is your secret weapon for Amazon product launches, to stabilize your Amazon sales, or to build an email list on autopilot. Go to www.futurestatemedia.com for your free guide to Google SEO for Amazon sellers.